Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Welcome back. It's the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, and we don't have guests on to fill up our space because we barely have enough time as it is. We don't have time for guests. Maybe we'll do an interview someday, but it will have to be a very important person. It would have to be... but we do help you focus on the news of the week, which we're about to do right now. And I'm reading a book, as I'm often want to do. I'm often reading a book, and I'm reading All Quiet on the Western Front, which is a movie I saw when I was quite a young child. And so, as is typically the case, the book is way more intense. And I'll get to a report on that and some other things surrounding that. But I want to start with Satan. I want to start with Satan. Should I? Because whenever someone's talking about science, for some reason I equate that with Satan. And that shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be that way at all, because after all, it is primarily young earth creationist Christian Bible believing born again people who were responsible for the scientific method. So science should not be associated with Satan. Let me just go to the Satan Club. I'm not going to go there myself. But reason number 1,283 to get or keep your children out of the government schools, especially if they go to the Moline Coal Valley School District out there in Illinois, is that now there is an after-school Satan Club. A Satan Club, I said. Satan! at the Moline Valley School District, and their parents saw a flyer. There was a flyer being circulated about the after-school Satan Club, and parents were upset. The flyer targeted grades 1 through 5 for the Satan Club. So when parents expressed their concern to the school district responded. Listen to their first response. Quote, this is from a statement from the district, because no single person had the courage to get up on stage and actually answer these questions. Instead, they issued a statement. The Moline Coal Valley School District understands that there is concern and confusion over an after-school club, unquote, which is a passive-aggressive attack on the parents by insinuating that they're somehow stupid because they're confused. Oh, you're confused about the Satan Club. Well, actually, I'm not confused. It says S-A-T-A-N space C-L-U-B. Satan Club. I'm not confused about that at all. Don't want that in my kid's school, and that's why I'm here to express my concerns. Anyway. Oh, is there? Well, we would like to provide, go back to the passive-aggressive school district. We would like to provide information from the district, because the district has policies which allow for community use of our facilities. And the district does not discriminate against any group. In fact, the district has in the past approved the Good News Club, which is an evangelism fellowship group. Please note that the district must provide equal access to all groups. To illegally deny the Satan Club organization to rent our facility alongside the Good News Evangelical Fellowship group, well, that subjects the district to a discrimination lawsuit, which we will not win. Oh. Likely taking thousands upon thousands of taxpayer dollars away from the teachers, staff, and the classrooms. Unquote. Says the passive-aggressive school district to the obviously confused parent. We understand your concerns, but it's probably because you're confused and you don't understand our policy. Well, actually, what it is that we don't believe that our children should be subject to good and evil as if they were equal. That's the problem. the Satan Club is evil. And the school district doesn't even acknowledge that. What they want you to worry about are the taxpayer dollars that could be lost in the lawsuit that they guarantee us they will not win. How do they know they will not win it? Because they can't tell good from evil. So how could they possibly win a lawsuit? They're guaranteeing you they're going to lose the lawsuit. And anyway, Dad, Mom, when you find out that the school district has a policy that says there has to be a Satan Club, that should be all you need. Just get your kids out of the government schools where they say they can have a Satan Club. Okay? Don't try to fight the system. The system, they think they have to have a Satan Club, and they think that's a good thing. So does that not get through to you just on a real fundamental level? Because if you think that what we need to do is we need to make sure that the policy works out so that the Satan Club doesn't afflict our children. The whole public school is a Satan Club. And you should be concerned about the other kids who are going to be afflicted with Satan, not just your kids. Anyway, there's reason number 1,283 to get or keep your children out of the public schools, the Satan Club. Keep them out of the Satan Club. This way to the Satan Club. And you point them to the school bus. All right, now to the justice file, where we all followed the Loudoun County School District Board, the father who got arrested for having the audacity to be upset that his daughter was raped in a bathroom and the Loudoun County School District covered it up. Remember that? Well, now that teenager who raped the girl, he's been sentenced. That's right. He's been sentenced to a residential mental health program, which I'm not even sure what that is. Sounds like he gets a house. I mean, there's a residence involved, and then they're going to do something about his mental health, and he'll be on probation until he's 18. But don't worry, Dad. We're also going to have him register as a sex offender. So we got that part covered. That way, the next time he rapes a girl, we'll be like, hey, we had him on this list. It's like we knew that was coming. Anyway, he has to register as a sex offender. And now Judge Pamela, who was the district judge in the case, she laid down the law as she issued the sentence of residential mental health and registered him as a sex offender. She said, quote, of the defendant, not the defendant, of the accused, no, the convicted, the criminal, the rapist, I should say. Let's just keep things simple. Here's what the judge said of the rapist as she sentenced him. She said, quote, this one scares me, unquote, about the rapist. Why? Well, because he had raped that girl. Number one, but also she had read a psychological evaluation of this particular rapist, and she said after reading hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these and being confronted with hundreds if not thousands of various rapists and deviants and perverts and criminals in her judicial career, she said particularly of this one, quote, this one scares me, unquote. At which point, she sentenced him to a residential mental health program, put him on probation, and registered him as a sex offender. Despite her fears, she overcame her fears. And so anyway, you rape a girl in a bathroom in school, and you end up in, that's reason number 1,284, to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Your daughters are basically bait in the bathroom for whatever deviant might. And then that deviant, by the way, he was shipped off to another school where he was accused of another assault, and he's going to have another trial, and he's going to be able to scare another judge. And then what? And then rinse and repeat. So there. Now, that's just that judge and that entire school district and the system and the whole construct that you people are feeding your kids into every day, those of you who feed your kids into the government schools. If there are any of you left who can stand listening to this broadcast, and I hope I'm getting through to some of you, if there are any of you left, it's not just that school district, it's not just that judge, it's the whole system from the top on down. It's corrupt. It's no longer a justice system, it's just a system. And now we have a story from the poetic Just a System. And the story circles in and focuses in on Baltimore, Maryland pit bull prosecutor Marilyn Mosby. You remember Marilyn Mosby back in 2015. We covered her exhaustively here on the Weekly Worldview, where she was dubbed the pit bull as she barked out all of the charges against the police officers she accused of killing Freddie Gray. You remember the Freddie Gray case? I know it seems like another universe ago, another century ago, but it was just a few years ago when she trumped up fraudulent charges against the police. Because why? The city was facing protests by Black Lives Matter, and she was afraid that there was going to be riots. So what she decided to do was feed these innocent police officers to the threatening rioters and the Black Lives Matter terrorists. Well, the prosecutions were sloppy, if you remember. Remember how sloppy and stupid that case was? Every one of the officers was acquitted of all the trumped up charges that the pit bull barked out. Freddie Gray remained dead, but all of the cops were, yes, the prosecution that Pitbull Mosby executed was a travesty of justice from left to right, up to down, top to bottom, all the way through and all the way wide. Anyway, Marilyn Mosby, who had thought about her since then? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. Had you thought about her at all? No, just when we see a Pitbull.
No,
we see a Pitbull strutting down the road.
I like Pitbull lately.
We like Pitbulls. So we actually managed to disconnect the any thought of Marilyn Mosby with a Pitbull because we like Pitbulls now. But so we had not much thought about her. But in 2021, she demanded that the FCC censor a local news station because they had published a report about her taking a trip overseas funded by a group linked with, guess who? George Soros. She took a trip funded by George Soros, who's been funding insanely communist, left-wing, hell-bent, destructive, anti-American, traitorous district attorneys. She takes a trip that's sponsored by him. Well, they say it's a group linked to a left-wing organization funded in part by... It's George Soros bought her a ticket, all right? Let's cut to the chase. We know what this guy's up to. So that's the last time we heard from her, was just recently, 2021, last year. She's mad because people are telling on her that she's linked to George Soros. She tries to get a local news station shut down by the FCC. Well, now it turns out that she's been indicted on fraud and perjury charges for taking advantage of the coronavirus relief bill. Oh, really? That's shocking. You're telling me that there are politicians who understood mechanisms by which they could run graft through all the coronavirus relief? How many trillions of dollars were out? She's like, hey, there was like all these trillions of dollars laying around. I want to do something with it. I mean, the coronavirus thing, it was bad. It was for some, but it never really panned out to be the catastrophe that we thought. So we don't want to just let that money lay around. So she took advantage of the coronavirus relief in the CARES Act and whatever other monstrosities were foisted upon us, spending trillions of dollars of our grandchildren's and great-grandchildren's money. And she used the money for a down payment on a home in Kissimmee, Florida, and another on a second home in Longboat Key, Florida. She bought two houses in Florida. In Baltimore, she's strapping the masks on people like a straitjacket while she's buying houses in Florida where you can go maskless. Just a little irony that I'm pointing out on that. But so it turns out that Marilyn Mosby is motivated primarily by money and stuff, right? Money and stuff and bling and things. That's what Marilyn Mosby is most motivated by. It turns out it's not Black Lives. Well, we knew that. But it's not even a socialist agenda. It's not even some supposed grand vision of Marxism that she might be able to institute that would be her legacy for generations to come. It's none of that. It's just all about the money and the bling and the clothes and the Louis Vuitton and the Mercedes and the second house and the rental house. What did I say? Rental house? I meant second home.
Yes.
I'm your host, Doug Roberti. I wanted to go until she held that note. I wanted to let her hold that note as long as she could. So I won't bring up the live version where she holds it for like a minute and a half. I know that annoys my extremely attractive audio engineer when I bring that up. But so there's Marilyn Mosby and the Poetic Justice System file. And by the way she went about stealing the money, it's all very convoluted and almost looks like she didn't actually steal any money. She was actually borrowing money from herself under false pretenses. But that's where we are. Straight up crime. If you're a politician and you're in the right place and you know exactly the right lawyers and how to write and talk about stuff, you can almost make it look like you're not actually stealing. And when she gets convicted of this corruption, it will not be because she actually was trying to steal and lie. It'll be for something else, which is how they have it all worked out, which is why the whole system's going to hell in a handbasket. So we go from there to the LAPD in the terminal adolescence file. We have two LAPD officers have been fired because back in 2017, they were called to a robbery at a Walmart store. So they were called to a robbery at a store from which they were approximately one block away. When they were called and told there was a robbery, they told headquarters that they were farther away than they actually were. They lied. Why were they lying? Because they had spotted a Snorlax in the Pokemon Go game, and instead of fulfilling their duties as LAPD officers, they chose to chase a Snorlax Pokemon through virtual reality. So the police shunned reality in favor of virtual reality. And by the way, this was before it was legal to rob a Walmart in Los Angeles. This is 2017, before they made it legal to rob, that's when this happened. So back then, the police were actually expected to respond to a burglary in progress, but instead they went after the Pokemon. So what more can you say about that? It's the terminal adolescence file, and that's where it goes. If you play video games, God bless you. I'm just glad I never got into it. I always had a tendency, whatever I got into, to do too much of it, and so I'm glad it was never video games. Just by luck of the draw. Just by luck of the draw, me. I have other things that I have squandered and wasted my time on and done wrong with. And if video games is your thing, then just cut it out, okay? Especially if you're ignoring a burglary to go after something that doesn't exist. And I'm going to talk about things that don't exist, by the way. I'm going to talk about things that don't exist today on the show. And then later on, I want to talk about virtual currency, the virtual currencies and the NFTs and virtual real estate. I want to talk about these things because I think they need to be addressed. As I get older, I start to realize that maybe I'm misunderstanding things that later on will become very clear and will become common knowledge, but right now they don't appear clear. And to me, digital currencies like Bitcoin and non-fungible tokens and digital real estate do not seem comprehensible to me. But I'm going to explore the possibility that they are comprehensible because things don't have to be real physically to be real. And I'll get into some of that today, but we'll get into it more later. Let's go on to something that's really real, and that's the career of Elvis Costello. Now, Elvis Costello's career, for me, existed starting about the age of 9 or 10 years old, when I would read into the back of a magazine or a Reader's Digest, and there would be an ad that would tell me I could buy 10 records for 99 cents. Now, records at the time were $3 or $4 each to buy a record, and I'm talking an LP. 10 to 12 songs, right? A full-on record. I don't know what they call them anymore. A drop. I think they call it a drop now. They don't call it a record. But to buy a record was $4 or $5, but you could get 10 records for 99 cents in the back of the Reader's Digest if you joined RCA's Music Club. Do you guys remember this? I'm dating myself. If you remember this, then you remember seeing Elvis Costello. And what I remember reading is, here's an album from this band and that band and this. Here's a guy who's Elvis, but it's not Elvis. It's this Elvis Costello who looks kind of geeky with dopey glasses and Who's that? All I knew was there's a guy named Elvis with a record, and he's not Elvis. That's how I was introduced to Elvis Costello. Had no idea what his music was like. I knew he looked a little bit like Buddy Holly. Why is he calling himself Elvis? I thought that was Buddy Holly. That's how I was introduced to Elvis Costello. Well, now, Elvis Costello, he has a song that he wrote many, many years ago called Oliver's Army, and it's a song that's based on his grandfather's experience in the British Army. Okay? It's a song that's based on reality, okay? And so there's a phrase in the song, and the phrase is white nigger. And it's in the song, Oliver's Army. Why is white nigger, why is the term white nigger in Oliver's Army? It's in the song because that's what Elvis Costello's grandfather was called when he enlisted in the army. They called him a white nigger. And so that's why it's in the song. Elvis Costello says, that's what my grandfather was called in the British Army. It's historically a fact. But now people hear that word and they accuse me of something that I didn't intend. So people are mad about the song now because it has the word white nigger in it. Oh, and so by the way, if I've offended you by using the word nigger, good. Because here's the thing, folks. This article I'm reading, they say white N-word. And they actually delete the word nigger. Because, well, I don't know why. So here's the thing about language, folks. There are certain things in the language that cause a response in people, a visceral response of uncomfortableness, of anger, of offense, right? And so there's a reason those words cause that. It's because those words are associated with bad things, bad people, bad events, bad attitudes, right? Well, the word nigger is one of those words. And so if we eliminate that word from the lexicon and we are never allowed to say that word again, we're going to lose one object lesson in why things shouldn't be done. And that's something we shouldn't lose. We should know why you shouldn't use the word nigger. And one of the ways you know that is by using it and causing everyone to feel like, whoa, what did you just say? And then you say, yeah, that's a bad word, right? But if we go to N-word and that's all we say for the next 50 years, we're going to lose this entire object lesson. Because N-word doesn't engender anything. N-word, what is that? It's meaningless. Oh, it's referring to another word that's really bad. Well, now you've lost the train of thought, for crying out loud. Well, Elvis Costello, the reason this word was in the song was not to disparage any particular race of people. It was to explain how one class of people viewed another class of people when that one class of people was sending that other class of people off to fight their wars. And so, anyway, it's a fairly deep and meaningful bit of poetry that the class that called the other class white niggers was sending them off to fight their war that they would profit from. Anyway, it's all complicated, but we can't have that anymore. And so Elvis Costello, by the way, used to be something of a bold, artistic person willing to stand and take a risk for his art. But welcome to 2022, Elvis Costello has bent the knee. He used to complain about radio stations bleeping the word. Starting a few years back, the radio station started bleeping the forbidden word. And Elvis Costello was upset about that. But now he says he'd rather they just stop playing it. He says he'd rather leave the song behind rather than being labeled as awful. So Elvis Costello, who, why would you care at this point? You're 70 years old, your career is over, you have more money than you could possibly spend if you tried to spend it every single day. Yet for some reason, Elvis Costello feels that he's now going to bow and say, you know what, I'd rather people don't play the song. He says he's worried about it because he says when he's old and decrepit, people are going to play that song and they're going to associate him with the word that no one shall speak, the word that shall not be spoken. The N-word, the mighty N-word, has toppled Elvis the Great. All right. So there we go. And now last year, I did not know this because I don't pay attention to such things. Last year, the Rolling Stones agreed to ditch the song Brown Sugar because of lyrics deemed inappropriate and problematic. But it wasn't the part of the song about using cocaine. That's not the part people were upset about in Brown Sugar. Okay, now there were parts of Brown Sugar that were genuinely offensive. But that's not the part that people are upset about and whatever. All right, so the aging leftist rebels, it's kind of, speaking of poetic justice, the aging leftist rebels are now being harnessed and controlled and molested and eventually eaten by the bastard children they themselves spawned. Because I don't know that Elvis Costello or any of the guys in the Rolling Stones actually ever had any legitimate children. But they had millions and millions and millions of little rebellious leftist heathens that they created. And now those leftist heathens are gathered for the feast, so to speak. And from there, we go to reason number 1,282 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. University of California has a new language guide. That right there alone, you should shut the book and say, Johnny, you're not going to UC. That's all. They have a language guide. No, they have language. That's the language guide. That used to be called a teacher who would teach you about language, but not any longer. Now they have a guide. That's right. The guide's, it's all about inclusive language, and it's committed to equity, diversity, and inclusion. And when you say those three words, you have to get more gay with each. Equity, diversity, and inclusion. By the end of it, you're a flaming homosexual, if you say it right. Or at least you sound like one, okay? That's the new language guide is also designed to encourage mindfulness. Mindfulness. What is that? Have you looked into mindfulness? So from best I can tell, mindfulness is meditation about anything except God, mostly yourself. That's what mindfulness is. I know you're allowed to think about the environment, right? I know you're allowed to think about clean water. You're allowed to think about starving children in India. But it's mostly always only focused on thinking about yourself and how you feel about those things and how good you are for being mindful of those things. So mindfulness. And if I've misrepresented it in any way, please let me know, because I only have a very superficial understanding of mindfulness because as soon as I started looking into it, I realized that it was stupid. So I stopped. So if you can help me with that, if mindfulness is something I need to look into, please help me realize that. Let's see, what else is the language guide designed to do? It's designed to add to your... It encourages students to add your own preferred pronouns to your email signature line. Just in case you haven't changed your pronoun yet, we want to encourage that. What else? The guide. Now, the university reminds us all that the guide is not an outright mandate, but employees of the UC system are expected to comply. It's not a mandate, but you are expected to comply. What does that mean? In the New World Order, we don't need mandates anymore. We just need enough people to expect you to comply. And that, by the way, that used to work in the good way, you know? Back in the olden days, there was a lot of things you couldn't even talk about because there was an expectation that certain things, you know, like what the deviants in that part of town do, we didn't talk about any of that stuff. And we didn't need a rule against it. We were just expected to comply, and we did. Well, now they're expecting you to comply with changing your pronoun and maybe even changing your plumbing. Maybe. And because that kind of stuff works. Anyway, back to the UC, they say, whenever possible, start using the better terms in the language guide immediately. So get that. Whenever possible, start using them immediately. I love that. By being forgiving to others, we will all work to break the old habits and form new ones. By being forgiving, unless you don't change your pronoun, we can't forgive that. One of the offensive terms is to kill two birds with one stone. Have you heard of that one? He asked.
Like that one.
It's from Yes, to kill two birds with one stone. Now, my extremely attractive audio engineer, she loves that term. She also loves birds. She also loves birds, but she loves the term to kill two birds with one stone because it comes in handy sometimes. Very pithy. Well, they have a replacement for that now.
Okay.
The replacement is feed two birds with one scone. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Thank you very much for sticking with us through the birds and the scones and the leftist rocking rebels and all of that. We come back now to, let's see here, reason number 1,283 for together keep your kids out of government schools. It's the fraternity system. The fraternity system, yes. Now, what's happening right now is that student leaders, which is that's a non sequitur. If you're a student, by definition, you're not qualified to be a leader because you're still learning. You're a student. But in college, we have student leaders because we're teaching children to act like they're adults when, in fact, they're just stupid kids. And they make stupid mistakes, and by telling them they're leaders, we lead all of civilization into utter stupidity, which is where we find ourselves. We go to St. Louis's Washington University, where student leaders are basically petitioning the university to kick all the white men out of the fraternity houses and fill them with LGBT and other as designated by the student leaders, mostly homosexuals, mostly sexual deviant perverts. But the thing is, we want to kick all the white men out at St. Louis, Washington University. Nine houses on campus are occupied by fraternity men who are disproportionately wealthy and white. Meanwhile, marginalized communities have little or no space. So we're calling on Washington University to terminate contracts with the fraternities and designate current fraternity houses as affinity houses instead. Affinity houses. So this is where we are, ladies and gentlemen. The fraternity houses that exist on campuses today and for my entire lifetime are dens of iniquity where men's... spirits, souls, bodies, and minds are corrupted and even destroyed. They're terrible. But now the sodomites want them. So we're going to go from the animal house to the sodomy house. So from just corrupting and damaging and destroying some of the men, it's going to now utterly corrupt all of the men, all of the women, the teachers, and then especially the children, because we're going to get the children in there too. Once it's a sodomy house, there are no rules. So we're going to go from animal house to the sodomy house because somewhere along the line, the church acquiesced to the idea that someone else was responsible for the education of our children other than us. That was a big mistake. Next time we do this, let's work on that. Okay. From there, we'll check in. From the widespread tyranny file with Novak Djokovic, the number one tennis player in the world. He has been, I'm sorry, not he has been, but his visa has been revoked from Australia by Immigration Minister Ethan Hawke. Ethan Hawke, Immigration Minister, issued the revocation of Novak Djokovic's visa based on the possibility that it would elicit vaccine hesitancy and misinformation, that it would spread misinformation. So here's the immigration minister decided that Novak Djokovic's claim that if you had this before, you don't need the vaccine, if you already had the bug, that that could lead to misinformation. So telling the truth about Novak Djokovic's health could lead to misinformation, which would lead to vaccine hesitation, because Novak Djokovic might make people who already had the disease think they don't need the vaccine. And we can't have that. And so listen to what the judge ruled. That's not even the scary part of it, folks. That's what you would expect from these laughable, hysterical tyrants. Tyrants, even. Yeah. That's what you would expect, right? Ethan Hawke is the picture of COVID tyranny, a maniacal, hysterical person completely removed from logic, reason, science, math, right, wrong. Ethan Hawke has no idea of any of it. He's experiencing a mania of the sort and extent that has rarely been observed in all of human history, is Ethan Hawke. He's at the height of a mania from which he can't be brought back without a straitjacket and some sort of tranquilizer. So we would expect that from him. But here's what the judge ruled. The judge ruled, quote, "It is no part the function of the court to decide upon the merits or wisdom of the minister's decision," unquote. Okay, let me read it again. "It is no part of the function of the court to decide upon the merits or wisdom of the minister's decision." Now, if you are familiar with what a court is, then it is it's the sole function of the court to decide upon the merits and wisdom of the decision. That's what the court is for. But the court has just said, we don't do that. Okay. So to revoke Novak Djokovic's visa, whose exemption from the vaccine was based upon natural immunity, the judge is not willing to admit if that's true or false. And he's not willing to decide on the merits. He's not willing to address that because why? He's a judge. A judge can't look at medical data and decide what's right and wrong. Okay, well, if that's the case, why are you a judge? A judge is supposed to be able to apply right and wrong to various situations based on an analysis of the evidence. Or that's what we thought, but that's not anymore. That's not what judges are for anymore. He also said he couldn't judge it on the merits, right? He can't do the math or look at the data. And he also can't judge it on the wisdom. So is this wise? Is this good for society and civilization in general, especially going forward? Isn't that what we rely on judges for? To take the long view on whether or not this is wise and no, not anymore. That's not what judges are for. Judges are now either rubber stamps or they are some other type of political tool to be utilized by whatever government official has the most pictures of them with a dead girl or a live boy. If any of that even matters anymore. So judges are now just political instruments. Anyway, Djokovic says he respects the court's authority. Now, that is pretty big of Novak Djokovic because he should respect the court's authority. Because the court's authority comes from God. The idea that there is a judge and that there should be a court and that we should all be able to petition the court and there should be a decision that comes from the judge, that is from God. The only reason that exists is because there is a God. So I want to tip my hat and say thank you to Novak Djokovic for saying he respects the court's authority. But Djokovic goes on to say he's disappointed with the ruling. He says, I cannot stay in Australia and participate. And so he's going to go home. And he says he'll have he'll have something to say later on. Australia's, here's what Ethan Hawke at the height of his mania unrestrained by a straitjacket of the tranquilizers that he so obviously needs. Ethan Hawke says, Australia's strong border protection policies have kept us safe during the pandemic, resulting in one of the lowest death rates and well, strongest economies and the highest vaccination rate in the world. We have the highest vaccination rate in the world. So, okay, so your formerly free nation has descended into a dystopian medical tyranny that's unrecognizable from what it was 2 years ago, Ethan. But he's happy about the death rate, some economic numbers, and the highest vaccination rate in the world. For whatever all that's worth. He's completely destroyed a formerly free Christian nation full of God-fearing people. And, okay, well, we'll keep track of that, Mr. Hawke. And we will look in on Ethan Hawke in whatever asylum he ends up in. Or prison cell. Or both. meanwhile, Ronald McDonald House. Are you guys familiar with Ronald McDonald House? If your kid gets cancer and he has to go to the hospital, Ronald McDonald House builds an apartment building next to the hospital so that the parents have a place to stay while their children are undergoing cancer treatment. Now that is a noble, charitable endeavor. I respect it, and I think it's a good thing. Ronald McDonald House is now evicting unvaccinated children and families. They've given a notice of eviction that children over the age of 5 who are not vaccinated shall be out by the end of January. And we have a quote from one father whose child is suffering from leukemia. The father says, "They are evicting my son with leukemia and anyone else out into the snow." He says the COVID cult is far more dangerous than COVID. If they'll evict families with cancer, what won't they do? Says the father. And you know what's eerie and terrifying about this? Is that there's a significant plurality of the population who's angry at this dad for not getting vaccinated. They're like, how dare you not get vaccinated? Your child has leukemia. You selfish bastard. Get vaccinated. Get with the program. That's what's scary about this. Now, according to Ronald McDonald House Ministries, according to Ronald McDonald House Charities, British Columbia, where this is happening, we continue to restrict access to the house and we're practicing COVID-19 safety protocols, including screening, temperature checks, physical distancing, enhanced cleaning protocols, and mandatory mask wearing. All must show proof of vaccination against COVID-19. These measures, in addition to an abundance of sanitizer and kindness, help ensure the safety of everyone at the house. And those of you who are upset by this, you're simply being unreasonable. We're going to respond in a very calm monotone, in a very passive-aggressive manner to let you know just how unreasonable you're being. And so from there, we check in with the National Health Services in London. We've just left British Columbia, which is in Canada, for all those of you who matriculated in the government schools. Check your map. The National Health Service in Britain, their socialized National Health Service, recently refused to provide treatment to Susan Sullivan, a 56-year-old who was suffering with COVID. She caught coronavirus in March 2020. She was admitted to the hospital. When she was admitted to the hospital with COVID, her parents were not allowed to see her. They were only permitted to contact her by telephone. Ida, Susan's mother, recalled that her daughter was upset when speaking on the phone with her, saying, she said, as soon as I heard my daughter's voice, she said, "Mommy, Mommy, I don't like it," unquote. That's the daughter with Down syndrome in the hospital with COVID, not allowed to see her parents. Her mother says, "I never saw her again." Just under 26 hours after Susan was admitted to the hospital, she died. Having never been permitted to enter intensive care. Why? because the hospital determined that because she had Down syndrome, she would not be allowed to receive the care that may have saved her life, may have prolonged her life. But because of Down syndrome, well, let me just hear. Susan Sullivan, who had Down syndrome, citing her disability as grounds to deny her the medical treatment she needed, which resulted in her subsequent death. So, folks, that's using as many words as possible to say they killed her. The hospital killed her because she had Down syndrome. Wow. It's not a sin. It's not a crime to let somebody die. It's not a sin, and it's not a crime to triage someone based on how many people you can save. But to deny someone care based on the fact that they have an existing mental disability, that's a crime. And that's the doctors in the National Health Service looking at a woman with Down syndrome and withholding the care that could prolong or save her life. That's murder. They say they denied access to the intensive care unit because of, quote, Down syndrome and heart problems. Susan had heart problems. England's National Health Service, England, the West, has a heart problem. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. So as I stated earlier, I'm reading All Quiet on the Western Front, which I can only classify as a brilliantly written chronicle of the reality of war absent of God. So that's the only shortcoming it has. It's absent of God. But as far as brilliantly elucidating the horror of war, definitely one of the books you'll want to read if you want to understand war. And so I was having a conversation with another friend about economics, and then I'm reading the book All Quiet on the Western Front, which is about World War I. And so I have some thoughts that have melded together through all of that, because I'm convinced that war is the opposite of civilization, right? War is uncivilized. And so I was talking about economics and civilization, and I'm thinking about it. I think economics and civilization are spiritual states. And in the end, economics and civilization are something of a confidence game. And I'm not necessarily talking about a nefarious confidence game like a con man pulls. I'm talking about reality. It's a confidence game. We're all... And all people, whether individuals or nations, we're all willing to accept one another's economic tokens, whether it's Federal Reserve notes or yen or stock certificates or even simple promises, because we have confidence in the fidelity of one another. And so instead of demanding immediate satisfaction for any perceived imbalance between what is given and what is expected in any transaction, you know, like the wolf and the hyena would as they gnash over the carcass of an antelope, we instead extend grace to one another. Through these various tokens, Federal Reserve notes, yen, stock certificates, even simple promises, we extend grace to one another, and this allows for us to have rest from the daily toil with which we are cursed. And it allows time for reflection and even peace and then even love, and civilization flourishes. And so my fear is that, not unlike the time before World War I, the men dwelling on the face of the earth have looked each other squarely in the face, expecting the grace that they had found before and that they had come to rely on intuitively and instinctively to be civilization. They've looked each other in the face expecting grace, but instead they got a flinch. And now nobody's quite sure of the previous arrangement anymore. Nobody's quite sure they can rely on what they had expected to see in the eyes of their neighbor and what had become civilization. There's just a little flinch, and we're papering over it as much as we can, and we're hoping to avoid actually having to fight over it. But I'm afraid that aside from divine intervention, there will be no other end to this but strife and poverty and, yes, war. In the end, this, what I've dubbed the big flinch, it's going to cost almost all of us everything. And it's going to cost every one of us more than it was worth fighting over. Because at the end of every war, every single combatant looks it all over and realizes it was not worth it. The war ends because everybody realizes it's not worth it any longer. That's how war ends. Because it's never worth the cost in the end. No matter how necessary a just war might be at the beginning, by the end, it was not worth it. What ended up happening was so atrocious that nothing could have ever justified it. There always should have been a better way. Other than the war, there should have been a better way. And there always was. Now, maybe you've heard, I've heard, by the way, because I've been sued and I've had to hire a lawyer. A lawyer. Perhaps you've heard it said that litigation is how we avoid warfare in a civilized society. You know who says that? Lawyers. And they usually say that while they're cashing the enormous check that you just wrote to them. It's almost like a backhanded death threat to keep you from pondering the fact that you've just been taken by a lawyer. Well, you know, the guy could be shooting at you. But really, I don't think it's litigation that keeps us from warfare. It's economics that keeps us from warfare. Litigation is really the reminder that war is always lurking just beneath the surface. And by the way, litigation is always the prelude to war. Always. But economics need never remind us of war. They need never lead to open warfare because economics are dynamic. Every man on every side of an economic transaction can actually benefit. Now, that's not to say economics are magic. Economics are real. And economics are built on a foundation of confidence. As long as there's confidence, there's no limit to how high or how far or how wide the fiat economy we can create can be extended. I said that. The fiat economy that we create, there is no limit to it. It's just all a matter of confidence. And by the way, there's no immorality in creating a reality by fiat in our minds, by our thoughts, or in the world, by our words, when the confidence to do so is rooted in godly fidelity. There's nothing immoral about dreaming big dreams and making big promises and pursuing greatness beyond what anyone would have imagined could have been achieved in the physical world. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with convincing others to invest in that. As long as that confidence is rooted in godly fidelity, in the pursuit of godliness. So the state created by confidence in economics is a spiritual state. Now, it can be governed by godliness or ungodliness. It can be governed by godliness or it can be governed by something else. And the fear of God is what keeps the peace. The fear of God is what holds back the dogs of war. It's the fear of God that allows for fiat economies to flourish. An economy where even the poor and the weak have the opportunity to survive and to even live well. And now remove the fear of God, and then, well, that void must be filled. And as of late, the fear of God has been replaced with simple fear. Fear of one another. Fear of death. Fear of uncertainty. Fear of getting sick, for crying out loud. And where the fear of God breeds confidence and grace, and therefore facilitates peace, the childish, petulant fears that we're being encouraged to indulge in, and which we are indulging, at their end, facilitate only war. So we must fear God alone and shake off this almost hypnotized obsession with the daily fear parade. Fear God, and then it will all be clear and appear for what it is. What all this that's happening is really just a rather clumsy, amateur manipulation of relatively shallow, dim-witted, weak, stupid, godless people being led to their own destruction. That's what's happening. But fear God, and then you'll be in a position to keep the peace in your own mind. And then maybe you'll be in a position to help these poor souls out of the sorry predicament they find themselves in. Following the likes of the local news girl and Anthony Fauci and whatever pop star is bloviating on their social media news feed about mindfulness, sustainability, and how we want to protect everyone. All right, so there's that. I do recommend the book, All Quiet on the Western Front. It's good. And so now that's a good segue into the COVID insanity. We'll end up closing the show on this. I want to start with Ehud Kimron. He's an immunologist at Tel Aviv University. And the widespread rebuke file. Professor Kimron writes, 2 years late, he's writing this to the government of Israel. Israel being one of the most spastic, hysterical leaders of the aforementioned clumsy, amateur manipulation of relatively shallow, dim-witted, weak, stupid, godless people being led to their own destruction. The Israeli government being at the tip of the sword in that regard. He writes, 2 years late, you finally realize that a respiratory virus cannot be defeated. Yet you do not admit it. But in retrospect, you have failed miserably in almost all of your actions, and even the media is beginning to have a hard time covering your shame, says Professor Ehud Kimron to the Israeli government at large. He says to the government, you refuse to admit that the infection comes in waves that fade by themselves, despite years of observations and scientific knowledge. You insisted on attributing every decline of a wave solely to your actions. And so through false propaganda, you overcame the plague. And again, you defeated it. And again. And again. And again. You refuse to admit that the vaccinated are contagious. You hope to achieve herd immunity by vaccination, and you failed. You refuse to adopt the Great Barrington Declaration. You chose instead to slander and discredit them. You have not effectively reported the side effects of the vaccines. Doctors avoid linking side effects lest you persecute them. Professor Ehud Kimron goes on against the Israeli government. Picture that as the Western governments of the world writ large, every single one of them. You slandered colleagues who did not surrender to you. You turned the people against each other. You branded people who chose not to get vaccinated as enemies and as spreaders of disease. And he closes with this. There is currently no medical emergency.
There is currently no medical emergency. To put it in the passive-aggressive terms of the enemy, perhaps they won't respond to a man concerned for the future of his children and his nation, who has a tendency to raise his voice. Perhaps this is what they need. There is no current medical emergency. But because of lust for power, budgets, and control, you still set policies as if there were. By propaganda and by psychological and engineering. This emergency must stop, says Professor Ehud Kimron at Tel Aviv University, who's an actual epidemiologist. And by the way, he links in this article, which I will link to an article he wrote in May 2020, where he basically says the same thing. And this is almost an I told you so. But he doesn't say I told you so. He simply links to the article he wrote almost 2 years ago, warning of the same thing. Now, do we want to do this? Okay, from the Not So Great Britain file, you'll have to go along with me on this, folks. If you can turn it off and listen later, you can listen faster, whatever. We've got Professor Angus Dalgliesh, a British professor. And he's talking about this policy of obsessive COVID screening. I just saw how the government's going to make 350 million free COVID tests available. You can order them right at your house. They're free. There's nothing free. And weren't we all taught that? Here's the thing. I think I was taught things in fifth grade that fifth graders aren't taught anymore. There's no such thing as a free lunch. It was an article we had to read. There is nothing free, but now it's free. Anyway, and they want us to all have 8 or 6 or 3 COVID tests in our house so that we can test. What's going on? Well, here we go. From Professor Angus Dalgliesh in England, the policy of obsessive COVID screening is tantamount to national self-harm. That's right. It's like you're sitting in a closet burning yourself with a cigarette. You need help. He says businesses are now being crippled because of a mania over checking people for an infection that they may have no symptoms for. 1 million people are in isolation as of last week. The economy is at risk of grinding to a halt because people are testing positive. The NHS staff, the National Health Services staff, is unable to attend work for at least 2 days. 40,000 of them missed at least 2 days' work just in the last week for testing positive to a disease they have no symptoms for. 10% of the staff of many hospitals were on sick leave or on self-isolation. Why? Well, the Omicron variant is rampant, and no amount of self-isolation can halt it. But we also know that Omicron is mild. It's a mild. It's like catching a cold. He says people with Omicron are experiencing cold-like symptoms, if any, and yet are still being forced to sign off work for at least 7 days. It's like I had a conversation with another business person. I said it almost feels like this is the malingerer's last chance to take a week or two off on the pandemic. And giant bureaucratic companies and organizations have no idea how to deal with it. They can't just say, oh, well, if you're not sick, go ahead and come to work. Well, no, we can't. We have a policy. We have a policy in place that we put in place in a hysterical panic as we were subjugated and led around and basically enslaved in a rather clumsy, amateur manipulation of relatively shallow, dim-witted, stupid, godless people that turns out to be almost everybody. Being led to their own destruction. Yes, yes. Anyway, he says, just stop with the testing. Stop it. It's endemic. This should be the end of the pandemic. This is where everybody gets it and almost nobody gets sick. And almost nobody dies. This is what happens. This is what the epidemiologist from Israel was telling us that we've observed for like 150 years. It was called common knowledge before all of this. Anyway, we go over to the TSA. They've had a 1,200% increase in COVID cases. Yeah, and they may not return to the workplace for 10 calendar days. So guess what? Flights are getting canceled everywhere. Why? Well, we have a policy. We have a policy to be hysterical and terrified, even though we're not getting sick. Yeah. So despite the fact that this is actually the end of the pandemic, every bureaucrat gets one more ego stroke for coming up with that brilliant policy. Yeah. And every malingerer gets another week, maybe 2 weeks off. Right. All right. Meanwhile, over in China, we told you about the lockdown in Xi'an and the woman who died or who suffered a miscarriage in the parking lot because they wouldn't let her in because her COVID positive, negative test, whatever test was out of date. Well, now the Chinese government says, well, they've shut that hospital down. In fact, they say they've shut two hospitals down for denying people life-saving care. That's right. The Xi'an Health Commission says we will require the hospital to undergo recertification for at least 3 months. They cannot open until the Communist Party deem its protocol sufficiently improved. Unquote. And so here's the thing. Are the hospitals being shut down? I don't know. Are more people dying because they've shut the hospitals down? Are more people being denied care, dying in the parking lot of the hospital? I don't know. Is what I just read real or is it propaganda? We don't know. I mean, who can tell? Because the Chinese are liars and they're murderers, so we don't know. And the urinalists in the Western newspapers, they don't care to look very hard. They don't care to inquire as to what the truth is. So has China locked down Xi'an to murder 10 million people? We don't know. Is it a possibility? Yes, it is a possibility. But we're not going to know until 100 years from now when everybody here is dead. That's what it'll take. All right, what else? I don't want to do anything more on the pandemic. Oh, monoclonal antibodies. Well, monoclonal antibodies, I did not know this, they are pretty much experimental too. And we don't know what could happen if you take monoclonal antibodies. So be careful. I mean, by the way, they also use the HEK293 fetal stem cell line. I'm sorry, the fetal embryonic kidney line. That means they killed 293 live babies before they got kidney material that they set up in a lab that they can now reproduce. That's why it's called HEK293, because it was the 293rd innocent human being they killed whose kidney they took that they now have preserved, and they make this line. So that's involved in the monoclonal antibodies. It's also involved in the vaccines. There's another antibody involved in monoclonal antibodies that's from a human and a mouse genome that's pushed together. Anyway, so there's a lot about that we don't know that I'm just learning about that. Anyway, this is from the informed consent file. We don't know the impact of the monoclonal antibodies, these vaccines. All of this stuff was experimental. And some of it was ethical and some of it was very promising. But before the hysterical flip out, it was all experimental. And we would have never injected ourselves with any of this stuff before the big flinch. So just be mindful. Be mindful. Be careful. I don't know how to say it. All right. That's it. I'm going to sign off. This is the Weekly Worldview. No, do I have one more story that I can end on? Oh, here we go. From the Silver Lining file, homeschooling is up 500% since April of 2020. About 20% of Americans have pulled their kids out of the government schools, as opposed to just 3% 2 years ago. Uh-huh. From 1999 to 2017, which was when I and my extremely attractive audio engineer began homeschooling our children, homeschooling hovered around 3%. But now it's up at around 20% in just 2 years. And that's according to the Census Bureau, because the dictators in the government were so hysterical about this, they actually started tracking it. And so now we have reliable government data that about 20%. That's right. Uh-huh. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. And the Homeschool Legal Defense Association expects that number to continue to rise. We've been telling everyone as long as we can to get or keep your kids out of the government schools. And it took like a catastrophic event for people to listen, but they are awake and they are listening. And we belong to the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. We'll provide a link. And while I'm ranting, I'm ranting about tyranny and all of that. Maybe God is just calmly, patiently sitting back, counting his harvest, preparing for the next thing that he's going to do quite calmly. And that's it for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry. We will return next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.